Welcome to the Purdue Agricultural Economics Podcast. This is Jessica and my co-host, Dr. Ken Foster, head of the Agricultural Economics Department. What's going on, Ken?
Nothing much is going on. I just gave my final exam to my students, so freedom is right around the corner.
Yeah, I wonder if they feel that way.
I'm sure they feel that way. There is absolutely no doubt that they felt that they had a heavy burden lifted from their shoulders when they passed in that exam.
Well, slightly less freedom for you, though, because you still have to grade.
No, I'm done grading.
Really?
Yes.
What are you giving?
Sure.
Are you giving the Scantron? The circa 1990 Scantron approach?
We have a generous grading system in my class, and basically we take exams right up till the end, but they get to drop one exam. So they've taken exams on all the material, but if they happen to have a trip or some other conflict and they couldn't be there for the exam, then we just excuse them, give them a zero, and they know they have to take up this comprehensive final at the end. So it's low numbers of takers.
Oh, all right. Low numbers by how many?
I'm not saying.
There were some students there this morning. Okay, well, before we get off too much on a tangent here, I'd really like to introduce our guest today, Dr. Kevin McNamara, and he is a professor of agricultural economics here at Purdue, and he's done some fascinating research on some rather tumultuous and polemic, dare I say, regions. Ken, you want to elaborate a little bit further?
Sure. Well, I mean, you know, probably the most notable place where Dr. McNamara has been working is in Afghanistan. So I had the pleasure of traveling to Kabul with him in 2006 as a part of one of his projects, and I'll never forget walking around Kabul and being treated like we belong there because Kevin speaks the language.
Bravo, Kevin. Kevin, well, here he is.
You can prove it well.
Yes.
Apparently, as far as I can tell.
No way we'd be able to judge that. Welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you. It's nice to be here. And I speak enough Dari to get by well. I'm not sure that I'd go beyond that, but again, can effectively maneuver in the country and talk with and communicate with Afghans. And again, it's somewhat unusual for foreigners to be able to do that. And my skill falls back to the mid-70s when I was a Peace Corps volunteer in southern Afghanistan working for the Afghan National Agriculture Bank. So I've got a long history of engagement in Afghanistan. I left there in 76 and didn't go back till 2002, but have been familiar with Afghanistan for a long time and, again, active there, especially the last 10, 12 years.
Well, that Dari must have gotten a little rusty over those 20-some years, Kevin.
Well, I worked with farmers when I was there in the 70s, and they didn't have much education then as they don't now, so I spoke very colloquial Dari. And the language I used in the 70s comes back very, very quickly. When I started going back after 2000, I had to modernize my language a little bit and learn to speak a little bit more sophisticatedly, especially to government officials. So I stumble a little when I fall back on the new stuff, but the old stuff is really there.
That's great. I have to ask, when you were, you know, when you applied for the Peace Corps back in the 70s, did you put down any area of interest? Did you have an interest already in that region, or were you just sent there?
Well, like most of my parents' friends, I might have thought Afghanistan was in Africa.
Yes.
So I had interest in agribusiness, and it turned out that they had an opening for someone in agribusiness to work with the newly reorganized agriculture bank in Afghanistan. And so it was what I was recruited for and offered, and just decided to go to Afghanistan without much prior knowledge.
I was going to say, how was that?
That sounds like a common experience for Peace Corps volunteers. You know, get dropped into some place you've never heard of.
Yes. How was that experience?
Oh, it was quite a challenge and very different from where I grew up in the Midwest. This was, of course, in the mid-70s. It was after a major drought in Afghanistan. It was long before Internet and Skype. It would take 3 to 4 weeks for my parents to receive a letter from me. So, again, it was isolated. It was an exciting opportunity for me to learn about a different culture. operating under very, very different political and technological circumstances. It was quite an exciting opportunity.
Yeah, now I run across all these young Peace Corps volunteers, and they've got cell phones, and they're like calling home to their parents every week and, you know, every day. And I went for 2 years and talked to my parents twice on the telephone. Yeah. And one time was to tell them I was getting married. So,
you know, even for me, 10 years ago, no, 12 years ago now, when I studied abroad for the first time, we didn't talk on the phone. We sent, you know, once a week I would sit down on the computer and send them an email, or twice a week, but that was the extent of it.
Yeah, I know this is a little bit, maybe a little bit away from some of your projects, Kevin, but, I mean, do you see this, I guess, explosion in communication technologies in developing countries changing things dramatically in Afghanistan and some of the other places where you work?
Oh, yeah, I'm surprised at how much it has changed things in Afghanistan, which is probably a place that's lowest in terms of technological development. And I think where I see it the most is with younger people, who I would say people under 35, who I've had some contact with either through activities in Afghanistan. We've had an awful lot of them here, as you know, Ken, but they stay in touch when they make job changes, when they need information. Occasionally I'll get a Skype call from somebody who sees me on. So it's really a way for everyone to stay connected. I mean, when I'm overseas, I usually talk to my wife once a day on Skype. But these young Afghans who still face a lot of struggles in putting to use what they've learned, use it to reach out to me and others to get support. So it's a very, very valuable resource. We've also used some of the technologies in data collection projects we've done that we've trained the Afghan university staff to do. So it surprises me. It seems everybody in Afghanistan has a cell phone now. Most of them have them turned off because they can't afford the minutes on them. But it's a technology that's very, very accessible, and as incomes go up, will just become more accessible. So it's really a benefit.
So you mentioned some of the young Afghans that have been here to Purdue to me because, you know, passionate about students and everything. Those projects really hit home. So maybe you could tell us a little bit about some of the things that you have done to help build the capacity there in terms of the human capacity in Afghanistan's education system and agricultural sector.
Well, yeah, and as you know, Ken, but for general information, in 2002, when Jim Mosley was the Deputy Secretary of Agriculture, he was close with Ashraf Ghani, who's the current president of Afghanistan, and through various discussions, decided that USDA would provide Food for Progress money to the Afghan government for agriculture education and development of the Ministry of Agriculture. And I was recruited or encouraged to consider going to help administer these funds and accepted the challenge and went to the University of Agriculture at Kabul, the Faculty of Agriculture at Kabul University, to begin sorting out how to help them develop after 25 years of nothing, no education, no maintenance. You know, everything was just more or less in ruin. And you know, we started in 2004 doing an assessment of what they need in terms of human capital or staff development, and also began an aggressive effort to rebuild their buildings and get at least a minimum level of equipment in that. And part of that project was a partnership with a couple of Indian universities where we took young Afghans and sent them to India for MS degrees. And again, we're talking about universities who had faculty who really hadn't had contact with anyone outside of Afghanistan for 25 years. So the BS level education that the Afghans were getting was in no way comparable to a high school diploma here. You know, that initial project evolved into one where we started to get USAID funding. As Ken mentioned, he was helped me interview young Afghans to come here for an MS degree. We had a lot of support from throughout Purdue and a lot of skepticism, yeah, too, about whether or not these young people could come and learn English and catch up academically so they could compete for degrees. You know, they came and we learned a lot and they learned a lot and they were really successful in earning degrees. And several of that group, the first group was 13, six of them came back to the U.S. for PhDs and are not quite done with PhDs, but have been very successful. And since that first group of 13, we've had 15 more come to the U.S. for MS and PhD degrees. Six of them successfully defended their theses this semester and did a very good job. We've also sent about 120 people to India for MS and PhD training at the University of Ag Science and the University of Horticultural Science in Bangalore. So again, our thrust has been capacity building with an initial focus in the Ministry of Agriculture, in the university's faculties of agriculture, so that young faculty would have skills that they could teach students so the students can have some impact on production.
This sounds like an incredibly difficult situation to go into. I mean, there's so much work to just get it up to you. You even mentioned how the degree, when you without contact for 25 years, you said the degree was barely comparable to a U.S. high school diploma.
Yeah, not barely comparable. Okay. They didn't really have any education. Okay.
So what have you seen in the past 10, 11 years since this program has been in place as far as progress?
I think the biggest progress I've seen is for the individuals who came to the U.S. and went to India to get degrees. They go back to Afghanistan, and they're among the best-trained people in the country. So they're able to get good jobs to earn enough money to take care of their families. So it's completely changed their lives. They're having an impact on the economy, mostly through the Ministry of Agriculture and somewhat through the university system. One of the difficulties in the university system is that they're underfunded. They don't have budgets for operating expenses. And then another problem, which is especially true in Kabul University, is the older people, who I would say over 55, are somewhat embarrassed and jealous of younger people who have gotten education. So they really don't let them provide active leadership in the classroom or in other things. So there are still challenges to be met. But Herat University, I think, is an excellent example of where that leadership issue has changed. The chancellor at the university and the dean of agriculture there are very, very bright men and very progressive and flexible. So we've got a partnership with Herat University right now where we're establishing a food technology department and getting cooperation from all levels of the university and from the Faculty of Science or College of Science and the College of Veterinary Science. And again, the leadership has enabled us to do a lot more. And Afghanistan's economy is really based on agriculture. There's some mineral extraction, but it's primarily an agricultural economy. And right now, they don't have any education anywhere in the country related to post-harvest, food safety, food processing, nutrition, or agribusiness, areas that are critical to adding value to their economy and also helping them produce a safe product for Afghans to eat and to export. So when I look at Herat, I see a lot of potential. And we're also working with the Ministry of Agriculture. And again, they've had very good leadership at the top the last 10 years. And we've been able to work with extension staff in five provinces. We're in partnership with UC Davis, University of Maryland, Texas A&M, and Washington State University to rebuild an extension program within the Ministry of Agriculture. And again, good leadership at the top has really empowered us to do things. So there's been a lot of progress. I'm really impressed with how the people who have come to Purdue and the people who have gone to India have worked and progressed and learned and are able to earn money to support their families when they get back and are really providing leadership on the job. So Afghanistan's got a long way to go, but they've really started in this process of rebuilding education.
Yeah, it just struck me when I was there, and again, it's been a long time, Kevin. It was 2006, I think, when we were there together. But one of the things that struck me about Afghanistan was it just drove home this lesson that anywhere you go in the world, people really want the same things. They really want to build a better society for their kids and their families, and they want the next generation to have more than what they had themselves. And And while Afghanistan's been torn apart by lots of external and internal forces, I think the average person there struck me as that's what they wanted. They really wanted to build a community for themselves and their
children. Yeah, I agree 100%. And you know, we've had a national and state governments and local governments to provide a lot of support and security for us. Mm-hmm. Afghanistan's never had those kinds of institutions, so historically things have been a struggle. And then, you know, with the occupation of the country by the Russians and then the takeover of the Taliban, you know, people have no one as their champions, so they're really victims. And again, they just want a good life for themselves and their families. And hopefully, under the leadership of the new president, they can begin to work more toward that stability so they can achieve that. My name is Kevin McNamara, and you have been listening to a Purdue Agricultural Economics podcast. Thank you.